you very much again. My wife says it was a pet pit bull. I think it was a kangaroo. So we listen to the same story. We could take, we can find out. We want to settle this right now. No, we don't. It's okay. I said Doberman, she said pit bull. But anyway, it was a cute story. I wouldn't want to be around either of those dogs myself, but the goat took them on. Okay, today I want to start by reading a couple summaries from 46 cases in which mistaken or perjured eyewitness testimony put innocent people on death row. I've read most of these, but I'm only going to read two to begin with. And it has to do with witnesses, these eyewitnesses. Randall Adams, he was convicted in 1977 and he spent 12 years in prison for a crime that he didn't commit. Mr. Adams was sentenced for the murder of a police officer in Dallas County, Texas. A purported eyewitness, who in fact was the actual killer, framed Mr. Adams and received immunity from prosecution in exchange for his testimony. Mr. Adams was not involved in the crime. The facts came to light after filmmaker Errol Morris took an interest in the cases and produced a now famous documentary called A Thin Blue Line. How many have ever seen that documentary? Mr. Adams and the victim were white. And they say that because sometimes it's, the black people are being picked on in these types of things. And these were white individuals. Now, think about what happened and think in terms of being a witness. Gary Beeman, another case. Mr. Beeman was sentenced to death for the murder of a man in Ashtabula County, Ohio. The conviction rested on the testimony of a prison escapee who claimed he saw Mr. Beeman with the victim at about the time the coroner estimated the murder occurred and saw him again shortly thereafter with blood on his clothes. The witness also claimed Mr. Beeman had admitted the crime. The Ohio Supreme Court reversed the conviction because the trial judge had prevented Mr. Beeman from calling an exculpatory witness. That's someone who can free you from blame. At the retrial, Mr. Beeman was acquitted after five witnesses testified that the man who had been the prosecution's star witness at the first trial had confessed that he committed the crime and that Mr. Beeman was not involved. Both Mr. Beeman and the victim were white. We may, if we have time, come back to that later, but we do have a scripture in the Bible that talks about witnesses. It's one of the Ten Commandments, as we all know. It's found in Exodus and also in Deuteronomy. We'll turn to one in Exodus 20 and verse 16. Exodus chapter 20 and verse 16. Here it tells us, "You shall not bear a false witness against your neighbor." Now that commandment to me is very simple. It's very short. You would think we would all understand it. You would think that we would read it and think, well, I have not ever bore a witness against my neighbor. But when you take a look at these words, bear, and the word false, and the word witness, and the word against, and you study them out, you'll find probably you started bearing a false witness at a very young age, especially if you had siblings that were fairly close and you have, as a child, wanted to make sure that your brother or sister took the blame. And you became a false witness when you were maybe 3 years of age. That's a very possibility. I know that no doubt that happened with our kids. No doubt it happened with me when I was a child. We may forget that we even did it. We were too young. But, you know, the younger kids have been a problem sometimes, and sometimes the older kids too, going to the parents and blaming their older sibling for something. Later on in life, they confess. They say, you know, I turned my brother or sister in. They weren't the ones who spilled the cocoa powder all over the house. It was me. So we look at this, and it is a serious problem. Let's go to a couple Proverbs here, actually a proverb and a psalm. But Proverbs 6 talks about the subject of a false witness. Proverbs 6. So Proverbs chapter 6 and then verse 16 through 19. And we're going to be going into the Bible books, I guess. And I should know where these books are in the Bible. Is that what the Bible study is going to be on? Anyway, Psalms, Proverbs. And just a note, if that's what the Bible study is on, quite often, 3, 4, 5 times when I'm going to sleep at night, I'll pick the books of the Bible to just rattle off in my brain and see if I've got them memorized in both, in a couple of different ways, because that's how you remember something. You just start in Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, the law. Then if you go to the prophets, you can go to the major prophet, the minor prophets, you know, and that type of thing. And you will eventually be able to rattle them off. Wasn't there a girl at camp who did that? Was it the books of the Bible last year? Which one? Was it you? Ah, real fast like this. 100%. 15 seconds. No, a little longer than that. Well, that's good. Yeah, if we can go through them like that. But in Proverbs chapter 6, so this is on how serious it is to bear a false witness. Chapter 6 and verse 16. These six things the Lord hates. Yes, 7 are an abomination to him. A proud look. Okay, so what we're looking at, brethren, is that a false witness, if you carry or receive a false witness, it is an abomination in God's sight. It is not just a white lie. It is really something serious. So a proud look, a lying tongue. So a lying tongue could be a false witness. You could lie about something that you did yourself, but a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood with those who were sent to death row and were not guilty, this would be a heart that devises, or hands that shed innocent blood. A heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among the brethren. So very serious, and a couple of those for sure, maybe more, all are in this commandment, you shall not bear a false witness against your neighbor. Now, as we go through this, you might be surprised at what a false witness is, because we're so used to a system in the United States, a legal system that is not according to the Bible. And we'll point that out a little bit later. But you might want to be thinking about the difference between judging and witnessing and the jury trial of the Old Testament and the one in the what we're doing now in the legal system in the United States. You might even want to think about the impeachment process that just took place with the acquittal that took place this last Wednesday and what might have been wrong in that trial. And I might say right away that I really think the president, President Trump, was guilty of abuse of power. I think he was, because just human nature, I think he may have been after an opponent so that he could do better in the elections. I certainly feel that that's very possible. But I don't know if it was an impeachable offense. I don't know about that, because you stop to think of all the presidents of the United States, they all probably could have been impeached when you stop to think of what happens because of just what goes on behind the scenes. So we just know human nature. But the actual way it's done, you know, you stop to think of how we bring someone to trial and the system that judges them. But anyway, here we have then an abomination. It is an abomination, and we are not trying to fit in with the world's standards. We're striving to follow the way of God and the standard that God sets. We find that in Psalm 15 that this is a problem that, if practiced, will keep us out of the kingdom of God. Psalm 15, where it says, "Who, Lord, who will abide in your tabernacle?" Who's going to be in the kingdom of God? For us, that's what it would be. For them, that's what it would be. For David, that's what he was talking about. Am I going to be in the kingdom of God? Are you going to be in the kingdom of God? Who will dwell in your holy hill? He who walks, and that's speaking of going up to Jerusalem, your holy hill, who will abide in Jerusalem forever? He who walks uprightly, works righteousness, speaks the truth in his heart, does not backbite with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor does he take up a reproach or receive a reproach against his friend. You can actually bear a false witness by giving one or receiving one and then spreading it. So we're going to take a look at some areas here. One is, first, is there a sin? Is there a sin involved? Number two, is the problem my business? Is the problem my business? Number three, am I a witness? Am I a witness? Number four, am I guilty of spreading hearsay? And we'll go through that and define it. Am I the judge? Am I the judge? Am I on the jury? So we have those areas. We'll go through them, and I'll try to come back to the actual statement. Is there a sin? Is the problem my business? Am I a witness? Am I guilty of spreading hearsay? Am I the judge? Am I on the jury? Is it a sin? Is it a sin? Now, there can be things people do that seem to be a sin that are not. So what we might think is wrong that somebody does is in actuality not wrong at all. It's not wrong to impeach the President of the United States. It's only happened three times, but it wasn't necessarily, we always have, you know, that little word in there. It wasn't necessarily wrong, or it's not wrong even to be a witness, okay? It's not wrong to witness someone and take it to a higher authority. It is not wrong to do that. In fact, in Leviticus, we find, and I'm not probably going to that scripture, but if you witness something, you can actually be wrong and under a horrible judgment if you don't take that witness to the proper source. Sometimes you can just, you know, not do anything with it. You don't have to do with everything, you know. You don't want your kids tattling on your kids all the time about something that is neither here nor there, okay? So there's some things that are so small, so insignificant, you just cover it. With a practicing sin, you'd want to say something. But again, we're looking at a witness. So in this sermon, I don't want anyone to feel badly if you need to do something with in being a witness. It's a false witness that we're concerned about today, a false witness. That's where the problem comes in, not being a good witness. God wants us to be good witnesses. So with Moses, you find in the Old Testament the story of Korah, his cousin. His cousin was a Levite. Being a cousin, he would be, probably. But whatever the case, Korah and a number of very high-ranking individuals, this is number 16, verses 1 through 3, thought that Moses was taking too much on himself. And he went and influenced 250 people. And maybe he didn't even have to influence them. They may have all just thought, they're in the wilderness, things are going bad, they're not getting enough to eat, they're not getting enough water, they're not getting any fish. There's no place to fish in the wilderness, I guess. So you can just see things weren't happening, and the Israelites at that time were starting to complain about everything they were. But Korah picked on Moses in this case and said, he shouldn't be in authority. Korah wanted to be in charge. Korah did. And so in this case, in Numbers, you see that it doesn't matter how many individuals, because all of this group was wrong in this case. 250 witnesses weren't good enough because they weren't there when God said to Moses, I am sending you to the Israelites in the land of Egypt, and you are going to go to Pharaoh, and you are going to be the one I use to deliver my people Israel. So we see a case then where he didn't do anything wrong. In that case, he did not do anything wrong. Jesus Christ was accused of blaspheming. Remember in Matthew 6, 26 that is? Matthew 26, you had a case where they said, for example, we heard Jesus Christ say that in 3 days this temple would be destroyed and raised up again. And they didn't know he was talking about himself. They were thinking the literal temple. But they looked around for witnesses. They found some false witnesses. And they knew that their story was so bad that they couldn't use them. And then they found some other witnesses that they could use that were also false witnesses. But Christ didn't do anything wrong. So it may not be a sin. Okay, so when we are hearing something, was it a sin? Was it right? Was it wrong? We brought out two cases that were wrong, but are there cases that are right? 1 Corinthians chapter 5, Paul said, I've heard that there's a man who has married his father's wife. And it was from the house of Chloe, I believe. And their witness was correct. And Paul then had to do something about that. So there are witnesses on something that is a sin, and there are witnesses on something that is not a sin at all. So we have to make sure of that. Is it a sin or is it not a sin? Could be, may not be. If it's something that is just against me, then I may just let it go, like we said. But if it's something that is larger and is going to hurt a person's spiritual life, we even have in Galatians 6 where somebody is committing an admitted sin, then you who are spiritual go to them. Matthew 18 is a, and I'm not going into Matthew 18 today, but 5 of the older manuscripts out of 10 do not even have the word against you in the manuscript. 5 do and 5 don't. In other words, it could have been somebody in Matthew 18 where it was someone who had committed a sin and they weren't going to change. So you have a friend going to them and then you have another friend going to them. We have a case back in New Jersey, I remember, where there's a fellow who had been sinning and no one knew it for a number of years. And finally, the time that I came, this fellow was... I suppose respected in the church, but one of his friends found out what he was doing and went to him, and he said, you know, you have to change, and if you don't tell Mr. Sargent, then I'm going to. And so the guy came to me, and he said, well, he was committing adultery is what he was doing. And he said, well, Mr. Sargent, his God is showing me that with this woman, when I marry her, then I will never commit adultery again. It's like, oh, so that's it. So you're going to divorce your wife, marry this woman who's not in the church, and God is showing you that you need this wife to keep you from committing adultery. It just makes a lot of sense. Sure, yeah, divorce her, I'll just, you know, remarry you. It's like, no, it doesn't work. So basically, this guy was sinning, but guess what? It was okay. And, of course, I had to put him out of the church because, and then he complained to headquarters. Mr. Sargent, put me out of the church? All I was doing was committing adultery. And it's like, oh, when the mind goes, it goes, I guess, doesn't it? And we always hope those people were never converted. So, is it a sin? Number two, I guess we could make it number two, but is it my business? Is it my business? Now, there are situations that would be our business. I'm praying. I know somebody has something against me. I stop praying, and I go to them, and I work it out. Now, sometimes people are offended so many times that you know you can't go to them because you're not going to get to square one. That happens sometimes, okay? You just, again and again, and I can't talk to them, and those things are understood. But again, it's your business, isn't it? So it is your business, definitely. So if I'm praying or my wife is praying and she has something against me or I would have something against her, we would pray for a good attitude, but we would not pray a long time about everything under the sun just so we don't have to face our mate. We say, Father, help me. You work it out. It is our business to work something out, and we do. And in our case, we don't like to go to sleep until something is worked out. We want to get this situation worked out. We don't, shy away from each other and stay away and pout and do anything like that. We just weren't built that way. We get out our baseball bats and we have it out. And we anyway. But what I'm saying, sometimes it is our business. If it's our business, it's our business. And like I said, if there's an admitted sin and we're spiritual and we have a friend and we can go help them, we can make it our business to try to help them. If it's an admitted sin and they recognize it, but they won't do anything about it. But has someone involved me in what is not my business? And basically, it's going to come down to the question of, am I a witness? Has someone involved me in a situation that is not my business at all? And this is where problems come. This is where problems come in society and in every group. We are involved in somebody else's business, and it's not everybody's business. It's something that is being taken care of, and now it's getting spread. And so we're going to go into this third area of, am I a witness? And what if I'm not a witness? Let's go to Exodus 22 and verse 12. Exodus chapter 22 and verse 12. Just after the Ten Commandments being given, you have some statutes and judgments. Exodus 22, verse 10. If a man delivers to his neighbor a donkey, an axe, a sheep, or beast to keep, and it dies, it's hurt or driven away, no one's seeing it. So what I do is I take my car over them, I'm going away, my garage is being fixed up, or somebody drove their truck through it, or something, you know, and I need them to take care of it. So I have my truck over in their garage. And it is stolen, okay? Not too many of us have donkeys that are stolen or oxen that are stolen, but we might have a vehicle. Okay, then an oath of the Lord shall be between them both that he has not put his hand into his neighbor's goods, and the owner of it shall accept that, and he shall not make it good. So he's going to accept the fact that it was stolen and that this guy didn't take it and sell it. Okay? No one seeing it is the key here, verse 10. No one seeing it. A witness has to be a witness to actually the thievery. That's what a witness is. If it's stolen and you didn't see it, or even if the guy did take it out and sell the truck and no one saw it, And you can't prove it. You're a witness to nothing at all. You have to see or hear. In fact, you find that your witness has to be so sure that you would be the first one to go out and stone someone if it were witnessing a killing, a murder. So you would have to be so sure that you could, in fact, it's talking about a group that would be doing it. Deuteronomy 7, let's go there. Deuteronomy chapter 7. And here, actually, this 17, excuse me, Deuteronomy 17. Deuteronomy 17 is really good on judges and witnesses. There was a case, and I'll read one more case at this point that I thought was very interesting. It said, Mr. Bloodsworth was twice sentenced to death for the rape and murder of a 9-year-old girl in Baltimore County, Maryland. Maryland, I guess it would be. No physical or circumstantial evidence linked Mr. Bloodsworth to the crime. But 5 witnesses placed him either with the victim or near the victim, near the crime scene at the time the crime was believed to have occurred. 5 witnesses placed him nearby. DNA testing ultimately established Mr. Bloodsworth's innocence. By the way, he was in jail for 9 years. 9 years. He was the first U.S. death row prisoner to be exonerated by DNA, and he received a full pardon. So here you have 5 witnesses who were near the area. In fact, you read some of these things, and, well, he was near the pop machine before, and the girl was over in the swimming pool, and he was near the pop machine before, and afterwards, I saw him around the swimming pool again. And 5 witnesses testified, and he went to prison, and he was on death row. So were any of those 5 witnesses eyewitnesses? And the answer is no. Not a one. They were not eyewitnesses. And this is our society in which we live. You take Congress and you see, well, yes, you know, we are eyewitnesses. I was 55 feet away when I heard him on the telephone talking to, or I was maybe 4 feet away. If I'm on a telephone and you're witnessing what the guy is saying, is it on the speakerphone? Or does a guy, and he's got a real heavy accent in the first place maybe, and you're picking all of that up on the speakerphone? Well, it is possible, but are you an ear witness, a really good ear witness? Are you going to pick up the guillotine? Well, are you going to send him to the guillotine? Better yet. I don't think you pick up guillotine, do you? Is it guillotine or guillotine? Anyway, it's interesting when you just watch Congress and you see what's going on. Mark Twain had a very good saying. He said, if you are an idiot and if you are a congressman, he said, I repeat myself. But that's what happens. There's the 50 wittiest sayings of Mark Twain, I think. And that's one I thought was neat. Saying that, I really think that it is important to respect offices. So it is President Trump, not Trump. It is President Obama, not Obama. It should be a title, because we get to the point now where, well, football players don't even stand up for the national anthem. And so they we're losing that respect, and we should not be losing that respect at all. But we're coming back then to witnesses. We had 5 witnesses here. Were any of them witnesses? And the answer is none of them were witnesses, not a one. In the church, God tells us we have to be witnesses. We have to be so sure that we would throw the first stone. Verse 6 of Deuteronomy 17. Verse 6. Whoever is worthy of death shall be put to death in the testimony of 2 or 3 witnesses, but he shall not be put to death on the testimony of 1 witness. When you go through all of these death row incidences, the testimonies, the eyewitnesses you find, in most cases, there was just one. Just one. Is that good enough? Do you cut yourself off from somebody because of one witness? The answer is no, we do not. We cannot say guilty as charged unless there are two or three witnesses. And in most cases, it's not our business. We come right back to, it's just not our business. So, it has to be two or three. Deuteronomy 19, verses 15 through 21, talk about the same thing. Deuteronomy 19. Now, did I just hearsay? Okay, so we go from witness to what we did here. Now, if I hear a witness, okay, if I hear a witness, what is hearsay? Well, hearsay is that mark this down because you won't remember it. Hearsay is, I heard somebody say. So it's not a big deal, is it? I heard somebody say. Does it matter if you hear the accused? So the accused, I heard him say that he's not guilty. Is that good enough? And that's, no, you heard something. The accused said they're not guilty. Does that make them not guilty? Can you get on a stand in this world and you are told you must come and you must testify and you are there and they say, what did you see? And you say, I didn't see anything. Oh, well, we thought you saw something. No, but I heard somebody say they saw it. You can step down, sir. That's all they would say. You could not even continue. What did you hear? I didn't hear anything. Oh, well, we thought you heard something. No, but I heard somebody say that they heard something. Could you step down? Because it's not gonna, it carries no weight. It just carries no water at all. And then the problem with bearing a false witness comes right here, because if we are caring about, if we received something that we heard and we carry it about, we are guilty, probably. It could be right, okay? It could be right. But we are probably guilty of bearing a false witness. We just are. If we didn't see it, if we didn't hear it, and now, of course, we have DNA evidence, but they at least like the guy close, okay, with the DNA evidence. I looked up yesterday because I was wondering about this question on a police lineup. With the British system, they have another word for it, but we have a police lineup. I was wondering, who do they choose on a police lineup? Well, I thought, are they all prisoners guilty of something? And the answer is no. There are policemen in the lineup. There are actors in the lineup. There may be another prisoner in the lineup. There's usually, five or six, I think. And so what they want, though, to make them about the same height, and they want them to look fairly close to the actual suspect. So when the person says, yep, that's the one, it could be. They're so close that the actual one could be chosen. But that's not totally sure fire, because you know, we white people all look alike. but if that's only one witness, you see, the one who actually was, well, would it be rape, or would it be victimized in some way, They're one witness. There's still only one witness, and it takes more than one. And there have been a lot of people go to death row because of the one witness, and it's the accuser. It's the one who was victimized. And they really think, in most cases, unless they were paid off, you know the stories, you watch crime shows and you realize what can go on. But back to the point, is it hearsay or am I a witness? So, am I hearing what a witness says? Okay, so a witness tells me, a true witness. Well, this person was a witness and I heard them say, it's still hearsay. It is still hearsay. We cannot do anything with it at all. It is still hearsay. I talked to the accused. I know the accused really well. It's still hearsay. The accused, you know, could be a witness to, you know, whatever went on. It's possible. So I'm not saying what you heard is wrong all the time. It's just that all of a sudden, back away. Not your business. You can't even talk about it. There's nothing you can say. Nothing at all. I know nothing. Clink, was it? Was it the movie years ago? Colonel Clink? So anyway, that's good to say. I know nothing. I'm ignorant. Don't talk to me. Well, you know, I feel something. I feel that they could be guilty. Yes, but their mother feels like they are not guilty. So which feelings do you go by? The neighbor could say, oh, I feel that person could never. That guy was the nicest guy in the world. I've lived next to him 10 years. He couldn't have done it. He did it. So what we appear, there's John 7 says, do not judge by appearance. So just because we have this gut feeling, you know, there's a lot of bad bacteria in our gut these days. So our gut is not necessarily telling us anything. So again, we have to take a look at this and say hearsay. A hearsay is a report of someone who only says. It's a report or hears. It's a report of someone who only hears. And it is not going, it shouldn't stand up in a jury trial. So should I listen to the accused? No, I shouldn't. If the accused is talking, it's wrong for them to talk. It's wrong for them to involve anybody else. And it's wrong for us. This word is receive, to receive also. You shall not receive. Not just bear a false witness, but bear is used three times in the Bible to receive it. So what do you think the biggest problem is? Who's most involved with hearsay or false witnessing? The many people that are hearing it, receiving it. So we can't even receive it. It's got to be, you know, keep this to yourself. But I heard my friend tell me about something that they heard from another friend who heard it from another friend, and they heard it from another friend, and all these people I really believe are good, nice people. And here, now, don't tell anybody else. Well, it's already been told 7, 8 times. And we know what happens even with a true witness. You start on this side over here, and you start working around with 45, 50 people. And my wife tells me what I said, and it's like, I didn't say that at all. In fact, I wasn't even talking about cherry pie. I was talking about apple pie. How can you get those things mixed up? And it is true. We did that with our grandkids when they were young. We'd be sitting at the table, and after dinner, we'd go around. They were maybe 3, 4, 5 years old, and it was funny. Everybody would be laughing because, and you know who mixed it up. It was a 3-year-old. You know, they're the ones, and they wanted to mix it up too, so they would kind of start jabbering in somebody's ear. It was a fun thing, but things get really out of hand. So should I listen to the accused? No. Should I listen to the witnesses? No, but there is one person who should, and that is the judge. The judge. Now, am I a judge? Well, in most cases I'm not. Now, the ministry is quite often a judge. The ministry is. But bottom line in all of this, brethren, is we do not have a jury system in the church. Okay, so this is what we're used to. We're used to listening to the witnesses and making a judgment, or listening to people who heard the witnesses and making a judgment. And I'm dwelling on this because we're so used to a jury system that when we hear something, we're just part of the jury. And we should be making a judgment. Doesn't God want us to judge? And the answer is, if it's none of our business, if we weren't a witness, then, hey, stay out of it. Unless you know that there is a sin and you can help somebody. Certainly, we covered that. But you know, in James chapter 4, it says the following, verse 11. Do not speak evil of one another. And it's the tasty stories that we can, or stories about somebody who did something wrong. Do not speak evil of one another, brethren, verse 11 of James 4. He who speaks evil of a brother and judges his brother speaks evil of the law and judges the law. Now, why would the Apostle Paul, or James in this case, the Apostle James, say anything about this? What would be, just looking at this, what would you say, and judges his brother? Okay, we think in terms of, well, yeah, it's the guy, we should be just forgiving him. That's kind of the thought that comes to our mind. But James knew that brethren shouldn't be judging brethren when it is not their job, when they're not even a witness, when they don't know anything about it, because that's basically what happens in all of this. In fact, Paul did say, is there not a judge among you, talking to the elders, no doubt. The elders weren't judging things properly back in Corinth, 1 Corinthians 6. Can I find a good judge? Because they had let this thing go about a guy marrying his father's wife, second wife, okay, third wife, whatever it was. And there was nobody in Corinth that were making good judgments. And you'd think, well, we had Paul saying, we have elders there, don't we? We have ordained elders. They should have been judging. And they weren't. So there is the responsibility of a judge. So what is supposed to be done with a judge is they are supposed to inquire. But we're not judges. So I don't listen to the accused. I don't listen to the witnesses. If I do hear the accused or the alleged witness, should I tell anyone else? If I do hear an actual witness, should I tell anyone else? Nope. Can't pass it on. They are a witness. They told me. I can't pass that on. They may be a false witness, or it may be their perspective. It may be a Doberman. It may be a pit bull. I mean, how are you going to know? Right? I mean, you just heard something. She witnessed. That is my wonderful wife, who's usually right. One out of 99 times, I'm right. But it could have been a pit bull, and she was a witness, and some of you were witnesses. So we have a lot of witnesses on that story, and I was a witness. So who are you going to believe? You know, 50% of you could have said pit bull, and 50% could have heard. So now it's in the hearing. Do we ever hear wrong? So that's why it takes 2 to 3 witnesses. My wife will tell me I said something. Now, in a sermon, I know she can go listen to the tape and I can be proven wrong very quickly, so I rarely argue with her on that one. Did I say that? Yeah, you said Ecclesiastes when it was Esther. Well, they both start with an E, and if they didn't find it in Ecclesiastes, they could have gone to Esther and find out the other E's. I don't say that, but you know what I mean. So we all make mistakes, but we hear wrong. We see wrong. They have proven. Someone comes into a room quickly, flashing a gun, and it's in a criminal investigation teaching type room. And they come in and they yell and shout, and maybe they have a, maybe it's a real gun, maybe it's a, what did we have when we were young? Some of the young people may not know, but you took and you have this reel and you put a cap gun. How many of you kids, I want to see a show of hands, remember the cap gun? You're all kids? You look pretty old. Well, you were kids. When you were kids, you had a cap gun. Yeah, we remember that, don't we? Well, what about the young kids? Andrew, do you remember a cap gun? You ever shot a cap gun? Your mother shoots your father with a cap gun all the time? Oh, see, I was a false witness, wasn't I? Okay, well, the whole thing is they run in, they rush in, and they rush out, and now they say, how tall was he? One person says 6'1", another says 5'8". Brown hair? No. Black hair? Maybe a blonde hair. Blue eyes? Brown eyes? They get things all mixed up. So that's why you need more than one witness. And they must be willing to throw the first stone. So we need to remember all of this. If I do hear, I don't tell anybody. Proverbs 26, wood for the fire, a talebearer for strife. What comes from a talebearer? Strife. False witness sows contention, so we have to be careful. There's contention that comes from it. There is a scripture, and I think I passed it up, but it's in, I think it was in Proverbs 25, which says, a false witness is like a person carrying a maul or a club or an arrow or a sword. In other words, they're just going to cause major problems, even death, a false witness. So we have to be very careful. Deuteronomy 17, in verse 4, as we come down toward the end of the sermon. Deuteronomy 17, in verse 4. Okay, you have Moses being told that the judges should do the following because there's a system that is being set up in Israel, and you choose judges, and if the judge or if Moses, did I say Noah? Moses himself, it is told you and you hear of it, verse 4, then you shall inquire diligently. The judge has the responsibility. If you're the judge, you are supposed to inquire diligently. If you're not the judge, you don't inquire. You don't make something your business, which is not your business. Just simply, simple put. And am I guilty of that? Yep, I'm guilty of it. We can be guilty of small things where people bring up, well, this is the way it is. No, this is the way it is. Well, I'm going to inquire diligently to find out and prove you're wrong. And it's like, why? It's just a pit bull. That's all. It's just a dog. It was a goat, wasn't it? It was. We both agree. It was a goat. And it could have been, although actually on the note that my wife gave me, it was, you know, she properly named, you know, who Jimmy was and what happened. So I messed it up a little bit, but I got the point across that Velma was quite the gal, and she did do a backflip over the couch, I think. But you see, we can get the details wrong. I'm glad you gave me that note. It gave me fodder for the sermon. Inquire diligently. Inquire diligently. And if it is indeed true and certain that such an abomination of worshiping other gods is true, then the person is going to be stoned. Verse 8, if a matter arises which is too hard for you to judge between degrees of blood guiltiness, between one judgment or another, or between one punish or another, matters of controversy within your gates, then you shall arise and go up to the place which the Lord your God chooses. Come to the priests, the Levites, to the judge. What happened in Matthew 18? They went to the church leaders. The church leaders made the decision. It could have been a time where the entire church made a judgment, but under law, you would really get into trouble if you take something that is so private that you have been talking to a person about, they're guilty. It's going to be a legal problem if you did take it to anyone past the judge. So we think, based on what we read in the Old Testament, that Matthew 18 is the leader, the judge of the church, the one who is speaking on behalf of the church. That's the judge, and that's who you take it to. Now, to wrap it up, let's go back to these stories for a moment, since we read you these stories in the beginning, and you kind of pick out what the problem was. Adams, Randall Adams. Mr. Adams was sentenced to death for the murder of a police officer in Dallas, Texas. What is the first problem there? Well, Texas. Actually, I think Texas has more prisoners than any other state, even per capita. At least they did. But that's not a problem. Okay. The problem is that there is a murder of a police officer, a purported eyewitness who, in fact, was the actual killer. What do the accused often want to do? They want to get somebody else in trouble. They'll try to work it out where somebody else committed the crime, and before often they even commit the crime, they're going to try to set it up to make somebody else look bad. Okay, was the actual killer framed Mr. Adams? He framed him. How many people do we have here? Is it one, two, or three? It's one witness. Framed Mr. Adams and received immunity from prosecution in exchange for his testimony. What do we have here? We have a plea deal. Is that how we do it? In the Bible, is that how you find it? Do we find a plea deal? No, we don't. He was not involved in the crime. The facts came to light after filmmaker Errol Morris took an interest. So we have one witness, and we have a judge who would be, or a system that would be wrong, and a judge who should have demanded more evidence. And basically a bribe, when you have a plea deal, you're going to bribe him? You know, look, we will, if you will do this, if you will testify, then we'll give you a deal. Because he was a criminal, okay? He is a purported eyewitness. And I think in this case, the man was a criminal before. Okay, Gary Beeman. He was sentenced to death for the murder of a man in Ashtabula County, Ohio. The conviction rested on the testimony of a prison escapee. Okay, you have a viable witness, don't you? He's a prison escapee. So are you going to listen to a prison escapee who claimed he saw Mr. Beeman with the victim at about the time the coroner estimated the murder? At about the time. He was with the victim about the time. So if a husband is with his wife and then leaves for work, 5 minutes later, someone breaks in and kills his wife. Well, the husband was with his wife about the time the murder was convicted. Is it the husband? Well, sadly, often it is. It's a homicide, a murder at home or from somebody in the home. So at about the time, is that good enough? Is this person a witness? No. Saw him shortly thereafter with the blood on his clothes. Did he? So, is he a witness? Well, now with blood on his clothes, what if he had just gone and eaten a hamburger and spilled ketchup on his clothes? Is that possible? And the answer is, yeah, it's possible. You know, I've seen these movies where, or the crime shows, where you have someone who saw, I think this was a 1930 or 1940 film with Ford, you know, the old actor. Was that Henry Ford? No, that's not Henry Ford. That's a different guy, isn't it? So Anyway, the guy's name, you know. And there was one man who said no. One man said no. This person is not guilty. And the reason he thought so, as it turned out, was this guy, the woman was pretty much blind. She couldn't see that far. She said she saw it across the street. She was virtually blind. She could see up close. And that hadn't been brought out. So, can you trust one witness? And the answer is, you can't trust one witness. And then of all things, the witness that claimed Mr. Abim admitted the crime, the same witness who is a prison escapee. The Ohio Supreme Court reversed the conviction because the trial judge had prevented Mr. Beeman from calling an exculpatory witness. So is it important to inquire diligently and not let up? The answer is yes. Be diligent in finding out everything you can about the crime. So there were so many problems here. One, witnesses, they're refusing to listen to others, hearsay, the report of another prisoner, and there are some things, you know, like, yeah, I'm going to this guy, he's a serial killer, but you know, he told us about several other crimes. Oh, yeah, you want to listen to him real carefully. Shoot him first, and then listen to him. But you see where some of the problems come in. Let's go to Galatians 5, verses 14 through 15. Galatians 5, verse 14 through 15. All the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. If we love our neighbor, we are not going to be going about with hearsay about anything, small or large, about anything that's bad. About anything that's bad. We just don't want to do it. It's hearsay. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, beware lest you be consumed by one another. False witnesses, just hearsay itself will just absolutely ruin any organization. But if we have a love for one another, an outgoing concern, we're not going to try to get anybody in trouble. Highly important. We have to live with each other's imperfections, and we're not going to be going around with anybody's imperfections. And so we don't even want to start with the smallest problems. Not the smallest problems. I have a story about a porcupine that someone gave me a couple weeks ago. It was the coldest winter ever. Many animals died because of the cold. The porcupines, realizing the situation, decided to group together to keep warm. This way they covered and protected themselves, but the quills of each one wounded their closest companions. After a while, they decided to distance themselves from the other, and they began to die alone and frozen. So they had to make a choice: either accept the quills of their companions or disappear from the earth. Wisely, they decided to go back to being close together. When they were close together, they were so close, their quills were pricking each other and causing wounds. They learned to live with the little wounds caused by the close relationship with their companions in order to receive the heat that came from the others. This way they were able to survive. The best relationship is not the one that brings together perfect people, but when individuals learn to live with the imperfections of others and can admire the other person's good qualities. The moral of the story is just learn to live with the, you can start and use the word P, but let's say the stickers of everybody else. So, brethren, if I can just leave one message from in this sermon, is one of the biggest problems that gets us in trouble is hearsay. Make sure that we are a witness and a true witness at that.